Your arguments next in California and against Southland Royalty and the related cases. Mr. Barnett, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. As the court will recall, we are dealing here with an oil and gas lease, actually two of them, but I think they can be reduced to one for purposes of the argument, a lease running for a term of 50 years to the mineral estate underlying the Waddell Ranch in West Texas, where the lessee, Gulf, was selling the gas from the reserves under the Waddell Ranch in interstate commerce pursuant to certificates of public convenience and necessity granted by the Commission. The question presented is whether, when the 50-year lease expires, Section 7B of the Natural Gas Act requires the lessors, Southland Royalty and others, that is, the holders of the reversionary interest in the mineral estate, to obtain abandonment authority from the Commission before they may stop that service of supplying gas to interstate commerce and divert that flow of gas instead to the intrastate market. Now, first I would like to explain why we take the position that what is dedicated to interstate commerce here and hence cannot be abandoned without the Commission's approval under Section 7B is the service of supplying gas to the interstate market from these reserves underlying the Waddell Ranch. The reserves from which the gas was continuing to flow to the interstate market at the moment that the lease expired. Now, respondents speak throughout their brief, and my colleague Mr. Atwell spoke throughout his argument last time, as though what was involved here was two distinct bodies of gas, two physically distinct bodies of gas, Gulf's gas and Southland's gas, as they put it. Thus, in respondent's brief at page 13, it stated, the Commission held that Southland Royalty's gas was dedicated to interstate service because Gulf had made an interstate sale of Gulf's leasehold gas. Whether Gulf thus dedicated Southland Royalty's gas is the issue before this court. That's respondent's view of it. In pursuit of this theory, respondents analogize the case to the situation of vertical or horizontal limitations on interstate sales. The case where a producer limits vertically to a certain distance below the ground the gas that is being sold interstate, or where a producer limits it horizontally, say to 500 acres of a 1,000-acre tract. Or respondents analogize the case to that of a split stream, where certain producers owning shares in a producing property make interstate sales of their gas, while other producers make intrastate sales of their shares. And respondents say that this case is, in their terms, simply a case of a severance in time rather than a severance in space. Quote from their brief at page 12, the severance between a fixed-term leasehold interest and a mineral fee interest is a severance in time rather than a horizontal or a vertical severance in space. And to respondents, they're both the same, and this case should be analogized to the others. As Mr. Atwell said last time, it's just as if Gulf owned Blackacre and Southland owned Whiteacre. The parcels are that separate. And so the Court of Appeals held here, applying Texas law. Well, there are several reasons why we think this analogy is no good, why we think a severance in time, that is, the severance created here between the leasehold and the reversionary estate, is quite different for purposes of the Natural Gas Act from the spatial severances to which respondents would analogize it. First of all, the argument ignores the certificates that were granted to Gulf here. The certificates granted to Gulf here were not limited in time. Now, in this case, we know that as clearly as we ever could, because the very certificates that were granted to Gulf for this particular, for the reserves under the Waddell Ranch, were before this court in the Sun Oil case and were expressly held there not to be limited in time. That is the first thing we find wrong with the argument. But more important, the attempt to analogize the severance, the so-called severance in time here with these limitations of space is quite inconsistent with the language and purposes of the Natural Gas Act. There is, first of all, a physical difference. In the case of the vertical or horizontal limitation on the interstate sale, the stream never flows in interstate commerce in the first place. There is simply a limitation on the amount of gas that flows in interstate commerce in the first place. There is no stream flowing in interstate commerce that would be shut off and diverted to intrastate commerce, as would happen here if respondents prevail. That is the heart of this case. Respondents here claim that by virtue of their status as a certain kind of property owner under Texas law, they may cut off a stream of gas from given reserves that is flowing to interstate commerce at the end of this lease and divert it physically to the intrastate market instead, without having to get the commission's abandonment authority under Section 7B. Now, the distinction here is crucial with respect to the purpose of Section B and indeed of the entire Act. That purpose, as this Court emphasized in Sunray, among other cases, is to protect the continuity of service to the interstate market, the stability of natural gas prices and supply. Well, in the case of the vertical or horizontal limitation on the sale, the interstate market never comes to rely on that sale because the gas is never flowing to the interstate market in the first place. The interstate consumers cannot become dependent on the part of the gas reserved, on the part of the gas that would now be reserved for intrastate use, because that part never entered interstate commerce in the first place. Here, in contrast, the stream of gas from the reserves underlying the Waddell Ranch has supplied El Paso's interstate customers since 1951. El Paso and its customers have come to rely on that supply. And indeed, the amount of gas involved in this case represents more than 1% of El Paso's total annual firm supply of gas. That's in the record at appendix page 375. Further, if El Paso loses this case, and if the commission loses this case, the amount of gas that El Paso would now have to return to Southland and the other reversionary owners under the protective agreement now amounts to 37 million MCF. That is 30.
Is that in the record, Mr. Brown?
No, that's not in the record. That's a figure as of March 1, 1978, supplied by the commission.
What difference would it make if it was 10 times that much?
Well, the point is,
to the legal issues involved in this case.
Well, the point is that that gas would have to come out of the interstate market. It would have to come out of supplies that El Paso would otherwise be able to provide to the interstate market. And that illustrates the purpose of the Natural Gas Act, which is involved in this case, which is to assure supply to the interstate market. Further, so as I was saying, the basic purpose of the Act, it seems to us, distinguishes sharply between the flow that has begun and would now be cut off by what respondents call a severance in time and a horizontal or vertical limitation or a split stream limitation where the gas never flows to the interstate market in the first place and thus there is no reliance on it and no continuity to protect. Further, we submit that the very language of Section 7B, the very word abandonment, distinguishes between a severance in time and a spatial severance. A statutory requirement that a service may not be abandoned is precisely a command that a severance in time is not permitted. That's what abandonment means. Now, if the statute also had a provision that prohibited any spatial segmentation, that prohibited any percentage segmentation of a gas reserve, then it might be appropriate to argue that severances in space can be analogized to severances in time. But there is no such provision. The very purpose and meaning of abandonment is that you cannot stop something that has been started, that a severance in time is to be distinguished from a severance in space. Now, this is supported also by this Court's decisions. For example, the Lovaca case, California versus Lovaca Gathering, 379 U.S. 366, cited in El Paso's brief, holds that we submit that once gas flows in interstate commerce, it is subject to the Commission's jurisdiction, that even without a sale for resale in interstate commerce, federal jurisdiction follows the flow, as the Court there said. That, too, distinguishes the so-called spatial severance, which would cut off a flow that has begun, the so-called temporal severance that would cut off a flow that has begun, from the spatial cases where the flow never starts in the first place. Now, we submit here that what has been dedicated on the facts of this case by Gulf Sail in interstate commerce is a service in interstate commerce, and service is a key concept under Section 7, as this Court held in Sunray, of course, a service of supplying gas from the particular reserves underlying the Waddell Ranch, and that service, that stream of gas running from these particular reserves, has been dedicated by Gulf Sail and may not be abandoned without the Commission's approval. Now, Southland has in fact taken a rather similar position with which we agree. In Southland's brief before the Commission, which appears in the record at page A476, Southland said this. I'm reading from A476. Preliminarily, mineral interest owners, that's Southland and the other reversioners, agree with El Paso's statement that once dedicated to interstate commerce, gas reserves may not be removed from interstate commerce without abandonment authorization. Gas reserves may not be removed from interstate commerce without abandonment authorization. That, of course, is what would happen here. This gas at the termination of the lease is flowing from the particular reserves under the Waddell Ranch. Our position is that that flow may not be terminated until the reserves are exhausted without the Commission's approval. Southland appeared there to have taken the same position. We would cite other support for this notion that Section 7 applies to the flow until the reserves are exhausted. In the Hunt case in the Fifth Circuit, 306 Fed Second 334, which the Commission relied on and which we quoted in our brief, the Court says that the obligation to continue serving is like the ancient covenant running with the land. Like the ancient covenant running with the land, the duty to continue to deliver and sell flows with the gas from the moment of the first delivery down to the exhaustion of the reserve, or until the Commission on appropriate terms permits cessation of service under Section 7B. I might here, since this case talks about a covenant running with the land, say a word in response to the argument that our colleagues from Texas have made. They argue that this notion of a covenant running with the land would create all sorts of problems of clouds on title in Texas, because one would never know whether some previous lessee of particular acreage had made an interstate sale and then ceased it. And thus, if one discovers a completely new reserve on that land, one might subsequently find that gas from that reserve had been dedicated. Well, as we pointed out in our reply brief, which our colleague from Texas apparently did not refer to last time, that is not an accurate representation of the position the Commission is taking here. The Commission's position here is that this gas is dedicated until the reserve is exhausted, that in the words of the Hunt case, The duty to continue to deliver and sell flows with the gas from the moment of the first delivery down to the exhaustion of the reserve. That is the covenant that the court was talking about in the Hunt case, and that is the covenant that we are talking about here. As further support for this notion of dedication of a particular reserve or a particular field, I would call the court's attention to the United Gas Pipeline case, 385 U.S. 83.
Well, what is it? What are you suggesting? You suggest it's just a matter of law, that federal law that says to a lessee that and to his lessor that if you're going to get in the interstate market, you're in until we let you out?
Once the lessee has made sales in interstate commerce pursuant to a commission certificate, which has no limit on time, that service
is dedicated
until the reserves run out.
Now, so when the lease expires, you don't dispute the fact that the lease expires?
Oh, no, not at all.
And when the lease expires, the lessor is still stuck in the interstate market because that was the rule of law in the first place, is that it?
That's right, because the lessee, acting within the authority granted by the lease, instituted a service which the lessee had full authority to do under the lease, which service has come under the commission's jurisdiction and is dedicated to interstate commerce so long at least as the gas flows from the particular reserves. As Southland itself said before the commission, the reserves have been dedicated. That is our position.
So if there was a clause in the lease that you cannot sell this gas in the interstate market, would the commission let it be, would a certificate issue for the interstate market or not?
If the commission knew about that clause,
there must be the leases are filed, aren't they?
The leases, in fact, as I understand it, are not filed. They're not brought to the attention of.
I know, but don't they? When they apply for the certificate, they must make some representations about.
It is my understanding that the leases, as a matter of course, are not brought to the attention of the commission, but let's assume that they are. I assume if the commission knows that the lessee has no authority under the lease to make an interstate sale, the commission would not grant the certificate.
So you're saying legally it is as though it was a joint application for a certificate, but from the lessor and the lessee.
Well, that is a legal conclusion, but it is not based on any agency that the lessee has from the lessor. It is based on the facts of what the lessee did within the authority granted by the lease. The lessee was authorized to make interstate sales, in fact may have had a duty to, when and did so, and under the Interstate and under the Natural Gas Act, with its purpose of assuring continuity to the interstate market, that flow, those sales from those reserves, may not be abandoned without abandonment authorization. That is our position. Mr. Justice White, the United Gas Pipeline case, Mr. Justice White, which I was just referring to, was an opinion written by you, as I recall, where the court rejected the notion that the word service under Section 7B could include only the sale of natural gas, not the taking and transportation of gas from any particular field. Rather, the court said, at page 89, it could not be more clear that United here abandoned a service, the taking of Johnson Bayou field gas and its transportation in interstate commerce. And we would cite that for the proposition that what is begun is a service of supplying gas from a particular field, a particular reserve, and that is what may not be cut off without the commission's authorization. Now, respondents argue that there is something being done here that is inconsistent with basic principles of property law, that one cannot encumber a property interest that one does not own, as they put it, and hence that Gulf cannot encumber Southland's gas, still pursuing their notion that there are two separate packages of gas here rather than a continuing flow from the same reserve.
Well, there are two separate owners, aren't there?
There are two separate owners.
One the general owner and the fee owner and one lessee.
That is true, Mr. Chief Justice. We do not question that.
Your case turns on the power of the lessee through the act to commit the owner in perpetuity.
Until this particular reserve runs out, in any event, yes. Or until the commission grants abandonment authority, of course.
Is that duty you speak of to sell in the interstate market, is that a Texas law proposition?
There is authority in Texas law, the Cole case cited in the briefs, for the notion that a lessee has a duty to sell. And at the time of these sales were made, the interstate market was virtually the only place that this gas could be sold. Now, respondents in their brief have argued that that was not true of Texas as a whole at this time. We submit it was true of the Permian Basin, where this gas comes from.
But in any event, you do insist that the lessee had the authority to sell in the interstate market.
I don't think respondents even dispute that, Mr. Justice White. Well, in response to respondents' argument about how one cannot supposedly encumber a property interest that one does not own, we do not see any such radical innovation here. We point in our brief to the Interstate Commerce Act cases, which support the proposition that once a lessee operates railroad property, there can be no abandonment either by the lessee, unless the commission grants authority either to the lessee or the lessor. But more basically, we would look at the basic purpose of public utility regulation. The purpose of public utility regulation is based on the public's interest in the service or the property being regulated. The purpose is to regulate for the public benefit a business or a property that has become affected with a public interest. And in the Natural Gas Act, Section 1A, Congress expressly finds that the business of transporting and selling natural gas for ultimate distribution to the public is affected with a public interest. Now, that is the business that the lessee here has started under the authority of the lease. The theory of public interest regulation has never been based on any notion of estoppel or consent, and thus respondents here do not complain and cannot complain about the fact that when they granted their lease in 1925, they had no way of knowing that the Natural Gas Act would come along. Natural Gas Act would come along later, or that the Phillips decision would come along later. They realized that they are subject, that the sales Gulf made at least, were subject to the commission's jurisdiction, even though they never consented to that when they made the sale. And thus, since the purpose of public utility regulation is based on the public's interest in what's being regulated, and not on any notion of estoppel or waiver or consent by the owner, it shouldn't matter that it's the lessor rather than the lessee who, by virtue of property law, has come into control of the property being regulated. Let me try a hypothetical case which may illustrate this. Suppose an owner of a large tract of land leases it for 25 or 50 years to a developer. This is undeveloped real estate. The land is leased to a developer. And the lessee proceeds to build residential housing, say garden apartments, on the land. Now, at the time of the lease, the land is not zoned at all. It's undeveloped and unzoned. But as a result of the lessee's construction of the residential housing, the local government authority steps in and zones the land residential. Suppose even further that the lessee appears at the zoning hearing and supports the residential zoning. Now, at the expiration of that lease, 25 or 50 years later, when the lessor comes into the reversion, if the lessor wants to build a factory on that land, the lessor may find that he cannot do so because the land is zoned residential. And that zoning has resulted from actions taken by the lessee under the lease. And we submit there.
Couldn't he tear the houses down if he wanted to?
He could tear the houses down if he wanted to, but he would still have to get the zoning changed, I suppose.
Why would he have the zoning changed to tear the housing down?
No, he would still have to get the zoning changed to build his factory, I assume, even if he could tear the house.
But at least he has the power to discontinue the use of the property for the purpose it's been used for during the lease, couldn't he?
Yes, but he does not. Assuming that what he wants to do is build the factory on a portion of the property that would not require tearing the houses down. In any event, the point is this property is now zoned residential. He would have to get that zoning changed somehow. And that is, in respondents' terms, the respondents might say, the lessee has somehow encumbered the reversionary estate. We see nothing strange in it. All that's happened is that the lessee has done something under the lease and within the authority granted by the lease, which has brought
example,
on these regulatory
I
consequences.
Your zoning laws probably would provide for notice to the landlord of what was going to happen to the zoning
True.
Rules, and he'd have a chance to appear and oppose.
Yeah.
Was there any similar notice here to the landlord about the, I mean, to the landlord of this lease about what future burden there might be on his property if the lease, if the gas were sold under state commerce?
Well, there certainly was an opportunity on behalf of the landowners, of the lessors in this case, to intervene in the commission proceeding, and indeed the record here states that there was no protest, no intervention in the proceeding
well,
which goes
to... How would they even know about the proceeding? Your zoning case that you give us is a similar example. They're entitled as a matter of right to notice, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. I cannot assert on the record that the lessors here knew of the proceeding. However,
there's no commission procedure whereby they would normally, in the normal routine, be given notice either.
I don't know whether there is or not, Mr. Justice Stevens. I can say that when the second certificate was granted to Gulf here in 1962, I think it was, by that time, the lessors certainly must have known that sales were being made in the interstate market. They were receiving royalties, and the record reflects that there was no protest or intervention in that proceeding either. So it seems to me fair to assume that this is not a problem of them not having had notice, and they have not asserted that they did not have notice of the commission's
proceeding.
I'm
just wondering how far you press your hypothetical example is all. In one case, they're clearly entitled to it. In the other, they may or may not have gotten it, depending on what the record might show.
As I say, they do not appear to contend here that they didn't have notice of the commission proceeding. And so we would submit that that is simply a similar situation. There's a case cited in El Paso's brief at page 9, note 5, a New York case, which supports a similar kind of consequence under the zoning laws. I'd like to say a few things, finally, about the consequences of this decision. We submit that if this decision below is not reversed, it would substantially impair the Commission's regulatory authority over natural gas, would undercut the Commission's ability to assure an adequate and reliable supply of natural gas to the nation, an ability which this Court, since the Phillips case, has striven to uphold.
Can the Commission require that the lessor join with the lessee in making an application to the Commission?
For the future, I suppose the Commission could do that. That would not handle a lot of the cases that have already come up. The Commission might find that if it did that, it would have less gas dedicated, but I suppose the Commission...
But that's the natural consequence of the Phillips decision,
yeah,
isn't it?
I suppose the Commission could do that for the future. It should be noted in the first place, that there is a lot of gas involved in this case. Respondents have belittled the amount of gas involved here, saying in their brief at page 14 that this case involves a minuscule fraction of the United States marketed natural gas production. They don't cite that minuscule fraction there. They did cite it in their brief in opposition to the petition for certiorari, page 11, note 7. And that fraction is 0.08. That is 0.8% of all the gas production in the nation is involved in this case. That is onshore and offshore, 0.8%. We would submit that that's not a minuscule amount.
0.08
is the fraction.
Is that 0.08 over 100 or simply 0.08 decimal?
It's 0.08, almost 1%.
Almost 1%?
I'm sorry. It must be almost 0.1%. I will check that on the rebuttal, yeah. Mr. Justice Rehnquist. I'm sorry. As I've said before, that is more than 1% of El Paso's total annual requirements. The significance of this case is further illustrated by the interest of the states of Texas, New Mexico, and Louisiana in it. To them, it is not a minor case. Further, the effect of the case would not be limited to fixed-term leases. It would, in fact, very possibly extend to the kind of lease that is quite common and that was involved in the Pennzoil case, in the Fifth Circuit. That was simply a typical life of the reserves lease, cited in our brief at pages 30 to 33, a life of the reserves lease providing for royalties to be based on the market value of the gas. The lessor insisted that this meant the intrastate market value. The state court upheld that, and the lessees applied to the commission for an exception from the commission's ceiling price, arguing that they would have to pay that higher rate. And they argued that if they could not pay that higher rate, the lease would be terminated for failure to pay the royalties. The commission responded that if the lease is terminated, well, the lessors will still have to carry on the service, citing the commission's decision in the Southland case. The Fifth Circuit, however, in reversing the commission in Pennzoil, said that is not the case. The commission was operating on the wrong legal premise in Southland in assuming that that gas was trapped in the interstate market, as the Fifth Circuit put it. Thus, it is quite possible that under such leases, if the lessor terminates for failure to pay the higher rates, the lessor is then in control, and under Texas property law, as respondents assert here, there is a separate estate which is not subject to the interstate dedication. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, please.
Mr. Deutsch.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, we believe that what is presented in the decision in the Court below is an attack on one of the fundamental principles of the Natural Gas Act in that it raises the central issue of whether the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission possesses the jurisdiction under the Natural Gas Act to protect the public's continuity of interstate service at reasonable rates. Now, my colleague has already referenced the congressional intent stated in Section 1A of the Act that the business of transporting and selling natural gas for ultimate distribution to the public is affected with a public interest. We believe that Section 7, and specifically Section 7B, of the Natural Gas Act embodies the heart of that public protection. The essential meaning of the abandonment requirement of Section 7B is to protect the public from a loss of gas and interstate service upon which it has come to rely. California agrees with the statement of the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals in the original Sunray case at 239 Federal 2nd 101, which states, no single factor in the Commission's duty to protect the public can be more important to the public than the continuity of service furnished. The Natural Gas Act does not deal expressly with the Commission's jurisdiction over gas, which is the subject of an expired lease. We think that this particular circumstance makes it entirely proper when deciding the Commission's jurisdiction in this particular instance to look at the reason why the Act was passed and the impact on the consuming public. My colleague has already mentioned the immediate impact of the loss of some 25 million cubic feet a day of gas from the interstate market. This is gas that El Paso has partially relied on in building gas facilities. This is gas that the consumer has partially relied on in putting gas appliances in his home. We also agree with the statement that this decision of the court below can foster reliance upon forms of leasehold arrangements which, under the protection of local law, will permit lessors to re-enter into possession of gas reserves at their discretion, ignoring the public interest, and divert supplies from the interstate service. This is a very real threat today. It's a real threat because of the difference and divergence of gas prices in the interstate and intrastate market. Obviously, the interstate market is regulated and the intrastate market isn't. There's also a great shortage of gas in the interstate market, and there is not necessarily that shortage in the intrastate market. It is in the interest of the producers to be able to leave the interstate market at their discretion in order to make the best profit possible from this gas. The question here is whether the commission will be foreclosed from exercising any authority over interstate service of gas supplies covered by the leases which terminate because of clauses in these leases.
You seem to emphasize the reliance of consumers on getting the equipment. How did the consumers know that this particular reserve was going to last either even 50 years, let alone beyond?
They didn't.
You don't really suggest that consumers go through a process of reflection and analyze how long a particular area is going to produce gas, do you?
Mr. Chief Justice, I do not, and I believe that is the purpose for the Act. If they have no way of judging the specific dedication of
then
gas.
Then why did you rely on that? You just made an argument that consumers bought appliances and put in, perhaps, I assume you meant household heating, because they were depending upon this supply. I thought you made that argument.
Well, perhaps I failed to say, and I thought I had, that impartial reliance. I was looking at it in terms of the overall picture that the consumers are relying on a continuous and reliable stream of gas and interstate service. And I believe that was one of the main purposes the Act was passed and one of the main duties of the Natural Gas Act, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Because the consumer cannot himself determine what each particular gas contract might say, it's up to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to protect the consumer in the consumer's reliance on a reliable and continuous stream of gas. That's one of the most important elements.
What notice did the lessor have here 50 years ago that this would be the consequence?
The lessor did not have notice that this would be the consequence, but I would submit that the obligation to continue the certified service is not one imposed by the agreement between the lessor and the lessee. It is imposed by the Natural Gas Act. And I would submit, and I think this Court recognized in the Sunray decision, that the idea of service is something separate and apart. Service of natural gas and to the public is something separate and apart than the agreement which initiates that service. And I would further submit that this is part of the idea of public convenience and necessity, that a particular agreement, in order to be certified initially, has to be justified by the service to which it relates. If there is no justification in terms of the public interest, then the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission should not certify that agreement in the first place. So in answer to your question, I would say that I don't think it's necessary that the lessor have had notice at the beginning of that 50 years. In fact, I don't believe the Natural Gas Act had been passed at that time.
I guess he has to employ, the lessor has to put up with the prices, I guess, that the interstate market sets, or the commission sets for the interstate market. And his royalties are figured on that, I suppose, aren't they?
Yes, Justice White. And I would add that we must remember at the beginning of this lease term, Gulf, the lessee, had the right to sell all of the gas under this reserve, and I think he had a duty to get the best price for that reserve, not only for that gas, not only for himself, but for the reversionary interest holders, which were the royalty, were receiving a royalty at that time.
Well, what law would be the source of that duty, state
Texas.
Or federal?
Texas.
I think that would be state law. It would be state law. But the point is that at that time it was in the reversionary mineral interest owner's interest for that gas to be sold in interstate commerce. Today, it is in his interest to have that gas sold in intrastate commerce. But the question is, under the Natural Gas Act, is it in the consumer's interest? And under the theory of Southland, the consumer's interest, which the Natural Gas Act requires the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to look at, could not be looked at all. The continuing stream of gas would simply be terminated because the lease terminated. What I think the theory of the case is that now the reversionary mineral interest owners receive not the royalty interest, but the entire sales price from this gas that is sold in interstate commerce at a rate set by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. But I think that this court, from the Phillips Petroleum Company versus Wisconsin case through the Catco and Sunray and Lavaca cases, have always recognized that there was a congressional intent to protect the consuming public's continuity of natural gas service at reasonable prices, and have determined or have reached decisions on the Natural Gas Act with that in mind.
Do you think that Congress recognized the same effect as this court recognized in Phillips?
I think that this court recognized the basic fundamental intent of Congress to protect the consumer in passing the Natural Gas Act. And I think that's a very important point. I think the Southland would probably tell you that without the Natural Gas Act, without regulation, there might be more gas in the interstate market. And so and there might very well be, but the point is congressional intent was to protect the consuming public because, as Justice Brennan said in the Sunray case, that if the producers and pipelines were left completely free to determine when to enter and when to leave the market and what prices to charge without the Federal Power Commission looking after their interests, there could be economic chaos at the local level. Mr. Chief Justice, my time is up. Thank you very much.
Very well. Mr. Atwell.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I've heard a great deal today about many reasons why this court should hold that Southland's Waddell Gas has been somehow dedicated to El Paso and interstate commerce. But I've heard precious little about the Natural Gas Act. And I agree with the Chief Justice that the basic decision to be rendered by the court is the power of a lessee through the Natural Gas Act to commit to interstate commerce the gas of Southland Royalty. As I understand the Commission's position in this case, it is that it concedes, one, that Southland has never dedicated any of its Waddell Ranch gas to El Paso, and two, that under universal common law, Gulf could not have dedicated Southland's gas because Gulf and Southland own two separate and independent interests. Instead, the Commission claims that the Waddell Ranch gas was involuntarily dedicated when Gulf made an interstate sale of Gulf's leasehold gas. According to the Commission, this dedication occurred as a matter of law under the Natural Gas Act. So we see the case as boiling down to the fundamental issue of as to whether Congress intended for the Natural Gas Act to abrogate established common law and empower private parties such as Gulf Oil Corporation to dedicate gas it never owned, never had any interest in, and never intended to dedicate. We submit that there's nothing in the Natural Gas Act or its legislative history to suggest that Congress intended such a radical result. To the contrary, the plain language of the Act shows that Gulf could not dedicate Southland's gas. In considering this question of statutory construction, the Commission would have you focus on 7B of the Act, the abandonment section. That section provides that if a natural gas company undertakes dedicated service, it cannot abandon that service without Commission authorization. But the Commission's looking at the wrong section. 7B merely begs the question, because it applies to dedicated gas. Here the question is whether Southland's gas has ever been dedicated, more particularly whether Southland's gas was somehow dedicated when Gulf made an interstate sale of Gulf's gas.
Was the lessee authorized to sell on the interstate market under the lease?
Yes, sir, Justice White.
Was it required to, or would there have been some breach of lease, breach of the duty under the lease if it just hadn't sold anything?
Absolutely. Well, he had a duty to market.
Yes.
But he could have sold in the interstate market or the intrastate market.
But he wasn't breaching the lease by selling in the interstate market.
No, sir, he was not. The record in this case does show, though, that there was a substantial intrastate market in the Permian Basin area. It shows that, in fact, Gulf Oil Corporation, on these very properties that are at issue here, sold all of its gas well gas and some of its casing head gas in the intrastate market. So there was an intrastate market connected into these very
Well, were there any rules in the governing, any official or unofficial rules governing the interstate market that the lessee wasn't authorized to live up to? I suppose he would have to live up to the prices that were set.
I don't follow your question, Justice. Why?
Well, he was authorized to sell in the interstate market.
Yes, sir.
And sooner or later, there came to be a regime of law that governed the interstate market, including prices.
Correct.
And I suppose the lessee was supposed to live up to them, wasn't he? Well, I mean, he wasn't breaching his lease by doing that.
By making a sale of Gulf's gas in the interstate market, they were certainly not breaching their lease. In fact, in this particular lease, Justice White, the royalty was payable on 4 cents per MCF per 1,000 feet, regardless of what sales price Gulf got for its gas.
Mm-hmm. Were any of these leases a percentage or no?
These leases were, no, they were the royalty was based strictly on a fixed rate of 4 cents.
I see.
In determining whether Gulf could dedicate Southland's gas, we submit that the proper section of the Act to be looked at is Section 7E. That section says that a certificate shall be issued to any qualified applicant who is able and willing properly to do the acts and perform the service. 7E makes it clear that in order for a producer to dedicate gas to interstate service, he must be able to perform the service. Gulf was never able at any time to perform the service of selling Southland's gas because Gulf never owned any interest in or had any right or control over the disposition of Southland's gas. As the court below noted, Gulf in the present case at all times lacked the legal ability to deliver any gas from Southland's property after the expiration of its limited 50-year term. As to Gulf's willingness to dedicate Southland's gas, I want to make sure that the court realizes that Gulf's assertion that it attempted no dedication of gas beyond the interest it owned is undisputed on the record in this case. Likewise, there has been no challenge to Gulf's assertion that it did not purport to dedicate the gas to El Paso, which it would not own after the expiration of its lease. According to the record, Gulf believed that any such dedication would have been ineffective as a matter of law to bind gas which it had no right to. I make this point because in the original argument, it appeared there might be a misconception that the record showed that Gulf intended or attempted in its contract with El Paso and in its certificate application to dedicate more gas than it owned under its 50-year fixed-term lease. Such is not the case. The fact that Gulf applied for and was issued a certificate of unlimited duration does not bear on whether Gulf was able or willing to dedicate Southland's gas. That simply meant that Gulf was obligated to sell all the Waddell Ranch gas it owned. It did mean that Southland either sought or was authorized to sell gas it didn't own. Gulf sought a certificate unlimited in time because its contract with El Paso covered not only its limited interest in Waddell gas, but also gas from a number of other sources where the leases were not for a fixed term, but for the life of the reserves. As a result, Gulf has delivered and is today delivering very substantial quantities of gas from these other sources to El Paso under this very same contract. In fact, those volumes of gas are substantially in excess of the volumes of gas involved in this case. Nor was Southland's gas dedicated because the certificate issued to Gulf pursuant to Section 7E imposed a service obligation separate and apart from the sales obligation imposed by its contract with El Paso. Under 7E, the service obligation imposed by a producer's certificate extends to what the producer is able to do. It does not extend to what he is not able to do.
Do you think the commission could make Gulf get permission to terminate? Let's forget about Southland.
the commission could get permission to terminate.
No. Would the lessee be required to get permission to terminate at the end of the lease?
The lessee, in this case, Gulf Oil Corporation, has been required to file an abandonment application. It filed such an application more than 2 years ago.
Do you think the commission was within its powers in doing that?
Yes, I do. But it's in full compliance with Section 7B of the Act.
But you say it would be just a pro forma.
Right.
The commission would be obligated to give permission.
Correct, Justice White, because Gulf's supply of available gas has depleted to the extent that continuance of service is unwarranted. Those are the words of Section 7B, and that is our position. In this case, Gulf service obligation was limited to the Waddell Ranch gas it found and produced during the defined 50-year term of its lease, because that was the only gas Gulf had any right to sell and deliver. Thus, Gulf service obligation in no way was binding on Southland. Let me illustrate by saying that in most instances, gas reserves are owned by a number of different producers. And if one owner in a gas reserve makes an interstate sale of his interest, his service obligation binds him to deliver all the gas he owns, regardless of any limitations in his contract, to the contrary. But this service obligation is in no way binding on any of the other owners. They are free to sell their interest in the gas to the purchaser of their choice. We say that's exactly the situation here. Gulf made an interstate sale of its interest in the Waddell Ranch gas. The service obligation it incurred under its certificate obligated Gulf to deliver, as it has done, all of the Waddell Ranch gas it owned. Gulf would have had this obligation even if its contract with El Paso had expired before the termination of its fixed-term lease. But Gulf's service obligation is in no way binding on Southland's entirely separate interest in the Waddell Ranch gas, because Gulf was never legally able to undertake any service in Southland's gas. I'd like to now turn to several of the points that Mr. Barnett made during the course of his opening presentation. The first I want to turn to is the question of reliance, which he mentioned, and I believe also Mr. Deutsch mentioned. We reject that claim entirely. As the court below noted, this claim of public reliance is supported, and I quote, by neither fact nor authority. None of the commission's orders under review here are based upon any such alleged reliance. And moreover, there's absolutely no evidence in the record to support a claim of public reliance.
Well, certainly Congress didn't need a claim of public reliance when it enacted the Federal Power Act in 1934. It could just legislate under its commerce power and tell owners of oil royalties and oil pipelines who had previously not been subject to regulation that hereafter they were subject to regulation.
There's no question, there might be a question, Justice Rehnquist, in my mind that Congress could do that if it encompasses that Congress could tell A he could dedicate B's gas. But aside from the fact, putting that aside, Congress could certainly, in effect, assert jurisdiction over producers and lessors.
And the fact that it hadn't before would be no defense to that assertion.
That is correct. And I think that really gets back to where we started from, and that is what Congress did in the Natural Gas Act. And what do the plain words of the Act say when read in a common-sense fashion?
Does your response embrace intrastate as well as interstate?
You mean the fact that Congress could assert...
Yes, your response to Mr. Justice Rehnquist. Could they regulate intrastate production and shipment?
Could they amend the existing Natural Gas Act?
Yeah.
I believe they could. I know there are some that take the position to the contrary. But I believe that a showing could be made by
this
Congress.
Under the General Welfare Clause, not the Commerce Clause.
I believe that also probably the effect that the intrastate market has on the interstate market would be a basis for Congress asserting jurisdiction on that basis. I want to point out that Southland did not ratify Gulf's interstate dedication of of Gulf's gas to the interstate market by accepting royalties. In an opinion, an exhaustive opinion, more than 6 years ago by Judge Leventhal of the D.C. Circuit, he pointed out that a royalty owner is not a natural gas company subject to commission jurisdiction because he's a landowner who simply enters into a lease for the exploration and development of his land, that that transaction is clearly not a jurisdictional one, and that likewise the royalty owner does not make a sale of gas in interstate commerce because he has no control over the sale one way or the other. The commission also contends that Southland's gas was somehow dedicated to interstate service in this case because of the continuing flow of Gulf's gas cannot be interrupted without 7B abandonment authorization. First, let me say that the record is unequivocal and clear that Southland's never made a sale of its gas in interstate commerce except under compulsion of the orders that are under review. So we don't have a situation where Southland's gas has been flowing in interstate commerce, and because of the flow, the commission can assert jurisdiction. The basic fallacy, though, in the commission's argument is that the only physical flow that Gulf could and did dedicate to interstate service was Gulf's leasehold gas, a 50-year flow. And as this court made clear in Sunray, once Gulf's gas commenced to flow, that supply could not be withdrawn from continued interstate movement without commission permission. Of course, Gulf didn't withdraw that supply. Instead, Gulf has delivered all of its leasehold gas. Therefore, Gulf's supply, the only supply which ever has flowed in interstate commerce, is gone. And in the words of Section 7B, it's been depleted to the extent that continuance of service is unwarranted. As to the basis for asserting jurisdiction because of what are essentially policy witnesses, I believe that Mr. Justice Rehnquist put his finger on the question about this proliferation of short-term leases if Southland prevails in this case when he said that clearly the commission has the power and can require all of the necessary information so to determine whether or not a proposed sale involves such a lease, and if so, to take appropriate action to protect the public interest.
You mean that'll be the consequence if Southland prevails or if it does not prevail?
We say that if Southland prevails, there's not going to be any short-term leases because they're not economically feasible. That many, many years ago, back in the late 1920s, these leases became extinct because producers are just not going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars drilling wells if they only be able to produce any gas they find for 2 or 3 years or whatever the defined term is. But that even if it should happen that there were short-term leases, the commission clearly has it within its power to require in its regulations that a lessee show the term of his lease, and then the commission can take such action as it deems appropriate to protect the public interest. As a second policy reason...
Would you explain that a little bit more to me? What could they do? Say a lessee came in with a 10-year lease. What could the commission do to be sure it would have a longer source of supply?
Justice Stevens, the commission could say, we're not going to certificate this sale unless you get the lessor to join. The commission could say that we are going to just refuse the sale altogether. We don't think it's in the public interest to have that. Thirdly, it could condition the sale on an unlimited term certificate, just as the commission did in Sunray.
But isn't this certificate unlimited in duration?
Yes.
In this case?
Yeah, this certificate is. In this certificate, the service obligation that was imposed by this certificate, as I spoke to a minute ago, Gulf service obligation is limited to Gulf's ability to perform. And Gulf's ability to perform here was limited to its leasehold gas. And under its lease, the only gas that Gulf was entitled to was the gas it actually produced during the specified 50-year term. So that the fact that Gulf got an unlimited term certificate really made no difference. It didn't affect, in other words, Southland, as far as we are concerned. As a second policy reason, the commission speculates that dedicated reserves may somehow be released from interstate commerce because of the reasoning or the theory of the Fifth Circuit in this case. They say that such theory may be applied where a lease grants a producer the right to dedicate gas. He dedicates the gas, and then his lease is prematurely terminated before all of the dedicated gas has been produced. They particularly refer to the typical life of reserve lease, which provides that it will remain in effect so long as reserves are found in paying quantities. We do not believe that the reasoning of the Fifth Circuit applies to such a situation. In his opinion, Justice Clark was very careful to emphasize that under its lease, Gulf at no time was possessed of rights in the Waddell Ranch gas that could extend beyond the 50-year term of its lease. Therefore, it's clear, we believe, that the decision below is based upon the fact that Gulf never, and I emphasize the word never, had any interest in or control over Southland's gas. In fact, that's the basis on which the Tenth Circuit subsequently distinguished this case when it affirmed orders of the commission holding the gas of Phillips Petroleum Company was dedicated to interstate commerce. The commission, in fact, in the Pennzoil case mentioned by the commission counsel, has gone even further and taken the position that the reasoning in this case actually supports the position that when a life of reserve lease prematurely terminates, the interstate dedication of reserves prior to such termination continues in effect. In any event, when this court is faced with a case involving the premature termination of a typical life of reserves lease, it may well conclude that because the producer under such a lease had the power to dedicate 100% of his gas reserves and did so dedicate them before his lease terminated, any such gas remains dedicated despite the lease termination. Such a holding would be entirely consistent with holding for Southland based on the facts of this case. All that the court need hold here, and all that we believe the Fifth Circuit held, is that one who has never had any interest in or control over gas cannot dedicate that gas to interstate service. Of course, if there's any question in the court's mind as to the extent of the decision below, it can and should limit it to the issue presented by the facts of this case, which is whether one who never had an interest in or control over gas can dedicate that gas to interstate service.
Suppose the Natural Gas Act said on its face that when any gas is dedicated by a lessee, that as a matter of law, the entire gas supply is dedicated to the interstate market unless there's consent of the commission. So suppose the Gas Act said that now, and tomorrow a lease is entered into and a lessee dedicates gas. You think you could bind the lessor in a manner like that or not?
Well, that first, of course, it's our position that the Act doesn't say that.
I understand that.
But I believe as long as
I'm just responding to your general statement that a lessee could never have authority to dedicate gas that he doesn't own.
I think that's probably right, because under the Natural Gas Act as it now stands, the commission cannot force someone to sell their own gas in interstate commerce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the lessee comes in, though, and says, I want to dedicate, and the law on its face says this will be taken as so-and-so, and the lessor has authorized him to sell in interstate commerce.
The lease
says on its face that he can sell it anywhere he wants to.
But you're saying that the Act is also amended to provide that when the lessee makes the sale.
Yes.
Well, of course, if the lease was entered into at the time that he had notice, then it might be a different
game. Let's just
suppose the implied consent.
Let's assume the lessor had notice of the law and of what the law was, and he entered into the lease. So is he bound?
I'd say he would have given his implied consent in that instance. But of course, in this instance, we have no notice whatsoever.
Of course, the lessee then is giving a the lessee is then dedicating gas in which he has no interest.
Well, but the lessor is, by entering into the lease with knowledge of the law as it is, giving his implied consent to the lessee to sell his gas in interstate commerce. It's kind of an agency argument, in other words.
Yes.
And we don't have that here, Justice White. I believe that this morning, this afternoon, the government said that they're not relying on any type of agency concept. I do want to mention two other points that Mr. Barnett brought up. First, he read from part of the brief we filed with the commission as to once gas being dedicated, it remains dedicated. But he quit there because the next sentence says, but this legal conclusion begs the question of whether gas attributable to the interest of the mineral estate of mineral interest owners has been dedicated to interstate commerce. And then we went on to answer another question that was asked this morning, and that is the effect of this court's decision in California versus Lavaca. We said that reliance on that decision is totally misplaced because there has been no physical movement of any gas attributable to our mineral estate. A question was asked of Mr. Barnett, could Southland have come in and blocked, in effect, Gulf's certificate application? Of course, Southland had no idea that it would ever be claimed that Gulf was attempting to dedicate Southland's gas. But in any event, in this case, the record shows that the commission told the Fifth Circuit, and I quote, that Southland Royalty could not prevent Gulf's total dedication of surplus residue gas to El Paso. As to the commission's analogy to an ancient covenant with running with the land, we find that unusual, that that analogy doesn't benefit them. Under common law, a covenant is not binding on anyone who is not a successor to the covenantor. And in this case, the decision of the Texas Supreme Court in 1973 made it crystal clear that Southland had a separate independent estate that was vested at all times, and that Southland is in no way a successor to Gulf. In conclusion, let me say that we think that this case is based on two basic principles still, and that is, one, that you can't dedicate what you don't own, and two, that Gulf Oil never owned any interest in Southland's gas, never had any right in that gas, had never had any control over it, and that therefore Southland's gas was not dedicated to interstate service when Gulf made an interstate service of Gulf's gas. For these reasons, we ask that you affirm the decision below. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Attorney General.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. The state of Texas, for reasons that we have outlined in our amicus brief, join in most of the basic arguments that have been presented by Southland. I would not want us to be in agreement here. Not that it's material to the decision in this case. We would not want to be in agreement that Congress could authorize a lessee to contract gas that he did not own, nor would we want to be in agreement concerning any congressional authority to control intrastate gas. But since neither one of those matters are, in our opinion, essential to the issue here, let me turn to Section 7B, which is the heart of this case, and state why the state of Texas cares about this case and what our interest is as we conceive it in sustaining the Circuit Court's decision and overturning the Federal Power Commission order in this case. Section 7B, as we've been over and over, speaks of no natural gas company shall abandon all or any portion of its facilities subject to the jurisdiction of the commission. Now, we say first that the congressional intent, as well as the clear reading of Section 7B, would require you to hold in this case that Southland Royalty is not a natural gas company within the meaning of 7B, that Gulf is the only natural gas company that would come within that definition or meaning. Then when it says facilities, we ask that you hold that the facilities contemplated in this case are only the lease that Gulf took, its lease, that that's the facilities, the 50-year term lease, or that that would be the facilities in any interpretation of 7B would be the lease taken by the lessee, and that the service intended is the gas covered by that lease and not any other gas, not any reversionary interest of anyone else, and that it's a misreading of the Federal Power Commission Act to say that the mere dedication of a lessee's interest to interstate service in some way, not ever stated by Congress, would then mean that as long as that gas were flowing, it would also authorize the bringing in under that service or that facility gas which the lessee didn't even own in the first place, or would extend the gas that was found after that particular lease were abandoned. We say that's a total misreading and a stretching of the Federal Power Commission authority, and that if Congress intends that, it should say so, and then and only then would we be facing the issue that's being inquired about in some of the questions, and we would certainly want to raise constitutional objections to it. But that is not here, that it's not intended, and the reason that we're concerned with any rule that would emanate from this case as broad as the Federal Power Commission order, and let me refer to it again, it said, the duty to continue to serve is like an ancient covenant running with the land. Now, that's a very,
or a new,
very...
Or a new covenant.
Sir?
Or a new covenant.
A new, ancient, or middle-aged is to us a very, very novel doctrine with no authority to support it and totally unprecedented in universal law. And that has to bother us because we own 16 million acres of land in our state. The state of Texas does. We're far and away our largest land owner. We have 4,000 expired leases that we've discovered just since 1944, covering over 2 million acres of land in our state. Now, that's just for openers. That's just what we could find going over in the General Land Office for purposes of this case. And when you are faced with the possibility of a rule about a covenant running with the land that could mean that the interstate dedication would extend beyond the lessee's interest, whether or not there had been an abandonment, you can see why our state would be very concerned and the havoc that that could cause, not only in because most of these abandonments have not been carried out. It would mean that our people trying to do business with us would find it very... does this mean my time has expired?
No, that's just the warning.
I'm sorry. It would mean certainly that people that are trying to deal with the state of Texas and taking these leases, if they... had no way of knowing, and they don't. You can't find these contracts that are made and utilized for interstate service. They're not recorded in any courthouse anywhere. You can't find them. You could come up here and dig around in the FPC files if you wanted to be that diligent, but we haven't found their files to be all that up to date. And it placed a tremendous burden to try to run down all those gas contracts. And how are you going to know when some contract was... You can't... The lease is down there, but you can't go find every unexpired lease. We found leases where there are 9 unexpired. We found land where there are 9 unexpired leases
How are you going to know whether in some prior lease 25 or 30 years ago, maybe someone had a dedication of some gas into an interstate a market, then the gas trickled out and the lease expired and someone went on to the next deal? Do you mean that when we're going to deal with people now to try to get new leases, to encourage them to go out and drill these deep wells and have this exploration, that they've got to try to determine whether someone years ago might have had some lease that under which there was some sale of gas in an interstate market, and by that be bound now to sell their gas regardless of the circumstances into interstate market? You can see the tremendous dampening influence that that would have on exploration at a time when we're all trying to encourage exploration, and you can see the cloud that it would put over titles and our ability as a landowner to do business. And that's why the rules should be, plainly and simply, as the circuit court has put it, and that is that the lessee can sell only what he owns. That's always been the law. That should remain the law for the purpose of deciding this case before us. There's nothing else that Gulf had except 50 years to sell. That's the gas they had. That's the worth.
Well, they aren't really. Nobody's trying to sell the lessor's gas. It's just a question of whether he must stay in the interstate market.
Well, you see, there was never any authorization.
I understand.
By Southland.
But nobody, Gulf isn't trying, nobody is suggesting that Gulf has the right to sell the lessor's gas.
Well, if you leave it in interstate.
I know, but it'll be the lessor selling it.
Well, but it's an involuntary sale.
Well, I know, but it would still be him selling it. Well, it wouldn't be Gulf selling it.
Well, Gulf would be, in effect, forcing Southland to sell its gas, whether it wanted to or not, into interstate commerce.
If the law were construed as the commission says, it would be the law that's making the lessor stay in the interstate market. Gulf is out.
Well, by what law, though?
I understand your position on that, but nevertheless, it would be Gulf would be out and the lessor would be in, and the lessor would be making the sales.
But the effect of it is that the lessor didn't have one thing in the world to do with the sale.
I understand your argument in that respect, yes, Mr.
It would just be an involuntary forcing of Southland to sell its gas into interstate commerce.
And at those prices.
And, yes, sir. And we're not worried. The price is not the issue here. Mm-hmm. California talks about its consumers. It talks about how many homes it'll heat in California. And they talk about losing gas. They have no gas to lose, because this gas was never dedicated into interstate service beyond the 50-year term. Southland didn't dedicate its gas. They're begging. They're bootstrapping themselves. They're just begging the question when they say
well,
that.
The issue in the case is, in what market may the gas be sold, I gather?
And we say
really
that Southland has the right to sell it to Texas, and we're here to say that it's our gas now, and that it was not dedicated under the previous transaction, that all Gulf could sell was its 50-year supply, that everyone knew that going in. El Paso knew what it was buying. 50 years. Gulf couldn't sell something they didn't own. They've had it now. Their gas is, their rights have been exhausted under the only lease that existed.
Exactly. Nobody's suggesting Gulf's rights are going to go on, do they?
Well, General Hill, is that quite right? If the commission is correct in holding that there's like a covenant running with the land and the landlord's gas is permanently dedicated, why would not the commission have the power to deny Gulf's petition for abandonment and keep Gulf in the picture? Because they'd still have a source of supply.
Well, because Gulf has filed an abandonment.
Yeah, but if the supply is still available, why did they may deny the petition for abandonment, may they not?
Why don't they act on it? That's a very good question.
Is it perfectly clear that Gulf is out of the picture if the gas is still there?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Your time is
Gulf
expired.
Gulf can sell only what it owns.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney General. Do you have anything further, Mr. Barnett?
Just a few points, Mr. Chief Justice. First, in response to Mr. Justice Rehnquist with respect to that fraction that I fumbled, it is 0.08 of 1%. That is nearly 1/10 of 1%. And as I said, that's more than 1% of El Paso's firm annual requirements. With respect to Mr. Atwell's argument that the case is really based on Section 7E, not 7B, because Gulf was not able and willing to initiate the service, there are several answers to that. One is that it contradicts the certificates. The certificates granted to Gulf said precisely that Gulf is able and willing to perform the service, and these certificates were unlimited at time, not limited to the 50 years of the lease.
So then, Mr. Barnett, do you agree that if the commission is right, Gulf may remain in the picture permanently until the well expires?
Not permanently. We do not take the position.
Well, until the well is exhausted.
No, we do not take the position that the commission could make Gulf sell Southland's gas permanently. The commission held that Gulf must seek abandonment.
Yes, I know, but they would have power to deny the petition for abandonment as long as there was still gas available in the well, would they not?
Well, so long as they also have power to deny Southland's petition.
Correct, but surely if they have the power over Southland, it would follow a fortiori, would it not, that they could keep Gulf in the picture?
Yes, so long as Southland is there.
But so Gulf really...
Why do you say that, Mr. Can't the lessor, at least, even though he has to stay in the interstate market, at least get rid of his lessee?
Well, I think that's true, too, that the commission could...
Well, it can't be both ways.
Well, someone else could be substituted for Gulf, I suppose.
Well, substituted? Well,
someone like whom?
What if the lessor says, the lease is expired, I understand that I have to stay in the interstate market, but I don't want to deal with Gulf anymore.
Well, in that case, that's what I had in mind by saying the lessor could bring in someone other than Gulf to...
Well, what about itself, Southland?
Well, I think Southland itself could...
If it were equipped.
Yes, I think Southland itself could be substituted for Gulf if necessary. The point is that Southland ultimately is the natural gas company by virtue of having succeeded to this dedicated service in natural gas.
But if Southland is a bunch of doctors sitting in Los Angeles, they're not going to want to start building a pipeline themselves.
Well, you don't have to build a pipeline to be a seller of natural gas, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, because there are many owners of producing interests who have no facilities in the sense of pipes or anything, but which are natural gas companies under the Act because they are engaged in sales of natural gas. Indeed, we would say the reserve itself is the facility if you need a facility.
On the last day of the 50th year, Mr. Barnett, why is any petition for abandonment necessary? What does Gulf have to abandon?
Gulf has a continuing service, which it is still performing, and as the commission said...
How can it perform anything under a lease after it's expired?
Well, all the commission said was that we are requiring Gulf to seek abandonment so that we will have all the parties before us if we have to rearrange their legal arrangements. It's really a sort
of... Could they order Southland to make a new lease with Gulf?
They could order Southland to make a lease with somebody to continue selling.
Well, then you've answered, and I'm sure it's not intentional. It seems to me you've given contradictory answers to Justice White and to Justice Stevens. To say that the commission can rearrange the legal arrangements of the parties, that's a rather strange notion to emanate from the statute, isn't it?
Well, to make clear that Southland is required to continue this service which Gulf has begun under the lease. The commission said we need all the parties before us if we are going to, I think it said, resettle their legal arrangements. But the point is that Southland contends that it does not have to sell this gas in interstate commerce. The commission would be telling it that it does. That is a rearrangement of the legal arrangement, at least as Southland views it.
But do you take the position, Mr. Barnett, that by virtue of Gulf's dedication, the commission acquired greater power over Southland than it has over Gulf?
Well, in the sense that after the 50 years, it now has power to require Southland to sell the gas.
But does it also have power to require Gulf to stay in the picture, assuming you're right on Southland?
To stay in the picture.
As lessee.
Not if Southland wants another lessee, but if Gulf's being in the picture is necessary to effectuate...
It doesn't have the power to deny the petition for abandonment, even though the source of supply remains available. That's your position.
No, it has the power to deny the petition for Gulf's abandonment or to require Gulf to file such a petition as it did here.
Well, it's filed it. The question is, if it acts on it, can it deny it? Mm-hmm. That's my question. Does the commission have the power to A, hold that Southland's gas must remain available, and B, we're going to deny Gulf's petition for abandonment. Does it have such power?
Yes.
What if Southland says we're not going to do anything at all? We're tired of this business. Mm-hmm. We're just going to let the gas stay where it is. We won't make a new lease with anybody. Can the commission say, here are three names, make a lease with one of them?
Yes. In the United Gas Pipeline case, the commission required a pipeline to keep purchasing. In the Sunray case, it required a seller to keep selling. That would be the same thing here.
But you wouldn't think you could, or do you? I don't know what your answer is now. May the commission keep deny Gulf's petition for abandonment and make it stay in the picture over Southland's objection?
Not if Southland has someone else it wants in the picture instead of Gulf.
Yes, all right.
But if Southland does not have someone else, if Southland's objection is based on not wanting this gas to be sold in interstate commerce...
Well, I suppose at least one reason for requiring a lessee under an expiring lease to file is just at least to make sure that the lease is expiring. And it isn't just a trumped-up arrangement.
Well, that may be one reason, yes.
Well, there wouldn't be much difficulty about that. The commission's records show... The commission's records,
as I understand it, do not show the lease. In this case, was brought by declaratory judgment actions before the commission. I think ordinarily the commission would not be aware that a particular lease is expired.
You mean because that's 50 years ago, but they certainly must keep records these days, don't they?
It's my understanding that they do not keep records of leases. I could be wrong, but that is my understanding.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.